Welcome to episode number 42 of the Weekly Leader Podcast. I'm Peter Mello from Sea Fever Consulting and the founder and editor of the Weekly Leader blog and podcast. And my podcasting partner, as usual, is Pam Fox Rollin from IdeaShape. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing really great, Pam. Thanks for asking. How you doing?
Good. It's back sunny in Sunnyvale, and all is well over here in the valley.
Excellent. And I think spring has sprung here, hopefully, although hopefully I didn't just jinx us to another big snowstorm, March snowstorm or something. But anyway, let's get right into the podcast. First, I want to thank our sponsor, which is GoToMeeting. You can do more, travel less, and enjoy the freedom of online meetings with GoToMeeting. It's a great service that allows you to connect with people online. You can see their screen. They can see your screen. You can chat. And actually, you can record what you do so you can save it for later. If you go to GoToMeeting.com/podcast, you can sign up there for a free 45-day trial. And it's definitely something that it's worth trying out. It costs you nothing. You don't have to give them a credit card or anything else. Just your email address is not a high-pressure sales in any way, shape, or form. And I encourage you to check it out. So go to GoToMeeting.com/podcast. Pam, Ed and I had Ed Brenniger, one of our Weekly Leader colleagues, bloggers, probably the most prolific blogger on the website, had a great conversation yesterday about organizing grassroots leadership events. And Ed actually has two posts up about that on Weekly Leader that I encourage people to check out. And it's a topic we'll probably do a show around, maybe next week even. So need to look at that, listen to that audio file and figure out how to put it together with Ed's posts and make it a show, because I think it's a valuable one. We also had a comment this week from one of our listeners, John Vaughn. He actually is located nearby to me here. He is a very big advocate. He's spread the word about the podcast quite a bit, and we appreciate that, John. He is on Twitter as John Vaughn, is it, I think? He turned us on to Matt Howard, one of our contributors who's written about fitness and leadership recently. So John is a big runner, and he has a podcast called Run New England. It's a video podcast, so if you're a runner, check that out. Anyway, I'm just going to read through John's comment here, which is about Undercover Boss, a CBS show. We've talked about it before. So there are a few bloggers saying that Undercover Boss is not a good show, but I have to disagree. Some thoughts from the trenches. And by the way, John is a manager at a large national retailer, a field support manager, and so he supervises quite a number of people spread out across a number of offices in a pretty big region. So he's got quite a bit of experience. The leadership lessons are not as deep or high quality as I would expect from the CEO of a major corporation. It's television. This is not a substitute for Harvard MBA class. This is TV, where eyeballs have to be on the TV to sell ads and create revenue. That's why Harvard doesn't televise MBA courses on CBS. There would be few sponsors. Probably has a good point there. No quality CEO should have to go undercover to know what's going on inside his company. I work for a national department store chain, and before any senior executive visits stores, neighboring stores help prop up the store to make it look good. The executive never sees the store in a real time. I've told many store managers we shouldn't do this, and they all agree, but don't want to be the one to test the example. One blogger criticized the waste management CEO for not talking to the people in the field, and stated that when only a few people were rewarded, it would create animosity among the masses of employees. Well, I talked to a waste management driver to see what he thought. He loved the show. He thought it was great. The people that were rewarded deserved it and understood that not all 50,000 employees could meet with the CEO. The blogger criticized the CEO for not talking to the people, but the blogger didn't talk to them either. My brother is a driver for waste management for 15 years and works his butt off, and I talked to him about his feelings about the show. Finally, and perhaps surprising, the show isn't about CEOs at all. This show is about how ordinary people doing ordinary jobs can do extraordinary things or be extraordinary people. It's about the guy that works hard all day but has no kidney, the American immigrant that is thrilled to be working third shift for low wages to secure a better life in America for his great-grandchildren. It's about the woman supporting her family and relatives while doing three people's jobs with little thanks and no extra money. It's about inspiration and perhaps more importantly, being inspired. The question remains, why would a CEO do this on TV in front of millions of people? Because it's a chance to share the history of your company, talk about your company's values, and letting people know you're not perfect but open to correcting problems. In an environment of high unemployment, the show sends a message to millions of people that your company is a good place to work, where the boss does care about the people on the front lines. From the CEO's perspective, it's an hour infomercial on their company and how much the boss cares about the people. Wonder what that would cost if you could buy it. Just my 2 cents from the front lines, John from the Poi. So, Pam, that's John's perspective, and it's interesting. John's in retail, so he presents an interesting perspective and obviously recognizes the value of the hour-long infomercial that the CEO has here. But a couple things kind of jumped out to me. And one thing was how, you know, to him, he sees this as a show not necessarily about the CEOs, but more about the people who work in the company and celebrating some of those people and working in these companies. But the thing that really jumped out to me, and maybe I thought about it, but maybe not as much as I should, is that, you know, the risk involved in leadership and taking a leap like this to do a show like this. So these CEOs, maybe intentionally, maybe unintentionally, really taking a significant risk in doing a show like this. And, you know, I'm not exactly sure of all the benefits of doing it, but so often we talk about leadership and risk. And certainly, you know, I think in this instance, John's kind of identified that they're taking a risk to do something, and maybe we don't know all their motivations of doing it. Maybe part of it is an infomercial, as he suggests, but maybe also part of it is a way to talk to the troops. And I don't know. What's your thoughts on John's comment?
To me, it was a really, really valuable and wise articulation of what could be good about this show. And I'm really glad, John, that you sent that in and that people have a chance to hear it. The heroes are definitely the frontline people. And it puts the CEOs in a role that we, in some ways, encourage them to be in, vulnerable, risk-taking, learning. And so there's where there's value in this show. Still think it's unwise for a CEO to dupe the people in his company. It would be, there are other ways to turn around this planned store visit phenomenon where they make everything look like Disneyland for a day. And yet, there is value, and it's exactly as John said.
Yeah, so we really appreciate John's comment. It took some time to obviously send it in to us, and we encourage anybody to join us in the leadership conversation here. You can do it like John did via email or submit through the website, or even send us an audio comment. We'd love to hear your voice on here with us as well. So thank you very much, John, for being part of the leadership conversation.
Peter, may I add that I've been getting some wonderful feedback on the interview with Miriam Rivera, who was a VP legal at Google, is now a private investor. And if you've listened to the podcast, you know she came up through a very difficult start and really has given a lot to the companies she's worked for and her communities. And so if you have yet to hear that interview with Miriam Rivera, I think it's episode 41.
Is that it? It is. Yeah.
Really encourage you to do it. It's a bit longer, and the sense that I'm hearing from people is it's well worth the time.
I couldn't agree more. It is so inspiring. And if you have not listened to that, stop listening to this and go over there and listen to that. And then come back to this,
okay?
Because it is fantastic. We usually do a leadership in the news segment. The only thing I just wanted to say is that I was driving home yesterday from the post office, and there was a truck parked on the side of the street. And instead of a bumper sticker, it had these big letters pasted on the back of the window of the truck. And it said, "Don't reelect anyone," with a huge exclamation point. And I just thought it was, you know, we've talked a number of times about change. And when Barack Obama was elected president, we talked about that as signifying change. And then more recently with Scott Brown here in Massachusetts being a Republican senator, which was totally unheard of, being elected and going to Washington. And then every day we pick up the newspaper and we're learning about congressmen, senators, representatives who are deciding not to stand for re-election. So change is a sentiment that I think continues to run here. I think politicians, political leaders are seeing it. And if you are an incumbent leader, I think you have a tough row to hoe. So anyway, not a leadership in the news. I'll get off my soapbox now, but I just thought it was an interesting it wasn't a bumper sticker, actually. It was pasted across the back of the car. And in a small town like ours, it's not something you typically see. So anyway, our social media minute. And this week, I wanted to mention, I think we've mentioned it previously, but our Weekly Leader Twitter Follow Friday project, which is we've done longer posts on the website about people on Twitter that we think you should follow. So the Follow Friday phenomena on Twitter is limited to 140 characters, but we're trying to identify people, give you a little more reason why to follow them. And our first post, my first post I did on this was included Wally Bock from Three Star Leadership blog, Tom Peters, and you, Pam. And this morning, it was great to see that there was actually on Twitter a dialogue, a leadership conversation between Wally Bock and Tom Peters. They went back and forth a number of times on a topic, and the only one missing was you. It would have been nice to have you in on that conversation as well. And Wally posted on Twitter today. I think your post had much to do with our linking up here. Thanks. I don't think that is the case, actually. But in any case, it was great to see. And you know, we've been trying to do – last week was a hectic week, so we didn't do one of those. But I look forward, Pam, to you doing it someday. But it was good to see leadership conversation engaged between two of our Follow Friday project participants. The other thing I just wanted to briefly mention, we posted a Fast Company video by Dan Heath about why mission statements suck. And
this is awesome. This is another, like, stop watching this right now. Follow the link in the podcast notes for 4 minutes. Watch this video and then come back, of course, to that.
Yeah, do. It's definitely worthwhile. It's
awesome.
Yeah, it's entertaining. It's fun, but it's so true. So, right. So that's our social media minute and website of the week. What's your research report of the week, Pam?
Well, mine will roll us right into the interview that you have lined up with John Lehrer from Business Week. So this is February 16th, 2010, Business Week article, The Best Companies for Leadership. And it's from a study that was a partnership between Hay Group and BusinessWeek.com, naming the 20 best companies for leadership. And I encourage you to look at the article. I'm going to read you some of the highlights because there were some really compelling things in here. People at the best companies for leadership sense the urgency to develop leaders more than their peers. So people who work in what they identified as the top 20 best companies for leadership say that their organization actively manages a pool of successors for mission-critical roles. 94%, that's almost everybody who worked for those companies who responded to the survey, and only 68% of the others. And frankly, 68%, I would say, is rather high. I would say that it's probably more like 20 or 30% of companies that manage the succession pool for mission-critical roles. Let's see. Positioning for the future, about 64% of respondents from the top 20 say people in their companies are expected to lead even when they are not in a formal position of authority. And it was about half that for the other companies. To me, this is really a hallmark, Peter, of a company that A, understands leadership, and B, engages their employees, and C, is going to do smart things strategically, as Nilofer was talking about New How, because they have engaged employees' heads, hearts, minds, instead of just their hands, you know, flipping through emails. So building an organization in which people say they're expected to lead even when they don't have that title, to me, is just the hallmark of a company that gets leadership. And then one of the notes I thought from P&G was really quite interesting. We start in developing leaders in thinking about the destination role. Where might that leader go? And help future leaders acquire a deep understanding of the role and then work backwards to see how you can get there. I've seen this work at a couple places. It's not a common strategy. And where I think it's most successful is when they help leaders earlier in their career map out several possible roles and figure out what are the opportunities, because otherwise people get locked in and they think, well, if I don't get this next promotion or this particular lateral or geographical move, my career is over. And I don't think that's the message that companies want to send to their high potential performers. But certainly helping people understand where they could go in the company is really, really important. And they were talking about GE identifying talented leaders early on and placing them in stretch assignments and then supporting them through those stretch assignments. Classic strategy and much potential to use it more often in smaller companies. The final thing that I'll mention is they talked about three different categories of companies' cultures. Some, such as Zappos and Southwest, are learning-oriented, fun workplaces. Other large global giants like P&G and GE are complex companies with cultures that are more traditional. And some, such as ABB, are known for collaborating for innovation that accomplish work through self-organizing project teams. And they talked about the importance of matching your leadership development program with the company culture, which, of course, should be aligned with the strategy. And I think that is a great message for companies at whatever size.
Great. Well, a great overview of what's in there. It definitely, it's really readable in Business Week. All of it's online, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes. So let's listen to John Lehrer, who's the National Practice Leader for Leadership and Talent at the Hay Group. Well, this week we're very fortunate to have John Lehrer, who's from the Hay Group, and they were just recently involved with a leadership study that they did in conjunction with Business Week. Hi, John. How are you?
Just fine. Nice to talk to you today.
Thank you. It's great to have you aboard. Could you tell us, first of all, a little bit about who the Hay Group is?
Hay Group is a global consulting firm that specializes in the implementation of strategy. It falls into several lines of service. One is aligning operating models, organizations, and job design with strategy. The second piece would be to get the right people into the right jobs through selection, through development, and succession. So that's the competency side of things that Hay Group started actually in the late 60s, started the whole competency movement. But the general intent is to help organizations and to help people to be effective in their jobs and to understand how they fit.
Excellent.
The other buckets are around reward, compensation, and the like. So those are the areas we like to work in that make strategies work.
Great. And I was on your website and noticed you have offices all over the world, rather.
Yes, we're in 47 countries, 3,000 professionals. I can remember when when I worked on the acquisition of Best Foods by Unilever, we did 600 half-day assessments of executives in 22 countries in 7 languages in 6 weeks.
Wow! Wow!
And that was quite interesting. And I've had the chance, you know, the 25 years that I've spent at Hay Group, the first half was actually working with all the offices worldwide as we expanded to understand our leadership intellectual property and our methodologies, and to work on marketing and developing those services in the various countries. So having a chance to work in 5 continents and be a guest in so many different cultures is more than anybody can ask for as a professional.
Tell us a little bit about your role with the study we're going to talk about.
Yeah, the more as a executive sponsor of it, and we had really really good researchers working with Business Week. We've done this for several years. This is our first year that we've co-sponsored with Bloomberg Business Week. We had a different co-sponsor in the past, but the main parts of the research are the same.
Let's talk about the partnership with Business Week. How exactly did that work? What roles did you play, and what roles did they play?
Well, you know, as far as the integrity of the research, you know, we were not looking to get to, you know, specific messages, you know, that would fly in a publication. They were very good about giving us the kind of research freedom to find out the things that we needed to do in an authentic way. So that went very easily. And then as we gathered all the data, and this year we had a wider geographical and global distribution of participants and different size companies. So when we found the different issues, then Business Week encouraged us to go deeper into 8 to 10 different areas on which they wrote articles.
Tell us a little bit about the methodology of the actual research and the time it took you to conduct it.
Well, you know, we've already started preparing for next year's, so it's a full 9 month kind of a piece. We distributed surveys in, you know, North America and Europe, Middle East, Africa, Asia, South America, and Pacific. There's more of a predominance this year in North America and in Europe, and that also has to do with the number of companies that are representative in those areas. But the distribution, 25% of the companies that were polled were over 10 billion. 7.5% were between 6 and 10 billion. 24% between 1 and 5 billion. And between half a billion and 1 billion was 12%. And what was very, very good as well is that we had 31% of companies under 500 million. So you can see then that there could be a message for any size organization in terms of the research.
The questionnaire goes out to companies, to individuals. What is in the questionnaire, and who fills it out?
Well, there's a variety of questions that are filled out by respondents within the organizations. In the past, it was often just filled out by a single person in the organization, but Business Week asked us to be more egalitarian, and so we had multiple responses from within organizations this particular time. So some of the questions, for instance, would be, you know, the degree to which leadership development programs better allow employees to deliver on my company's goals or strategies. Everyone in the company has the opportunity to develop and practice the capabilities needed to lead others. There are a sufficient number of qualified internal candidates who are ready to assume open leadership positions. So there's a variety of questions that get at all aspects of leadership.
And if I'm lucky enough to fill this thing out, how long is it going to take me to complete the questionnaire?
Oh, probably 25 minutes.
So before we talk about this year's trends, just wondering, last time you did this, you do this every year, and last time you did it, were there any trends that stuck out, you know, that we've been experiencing over the last 12 months or so?
Yes. One particular finding was a predominance of focus on execution.
Okay.
Was really strong in the last study. And that contrasts with this year's study, that the organizations didn't necessarily back off on execution, but strategy became a much more important focal point for the best companies for leaders in this year's study.
I guess people have executed about as much as they can execute. There's much more forward thinking and optimism. Is that part of thought about where the strategy is coming into play?
Yes. You know, when I think about it, when the recession began in 08 of December, people were heroes by being decisive. I'm not sure that we were strategic while being decisive. In a sense, it was, by gosh, do something. And as we go forward, we've seen that the best companies were decisive, but they were also being decisive within a framework. So one can lose the perspective going forward, the future perspective, by, I guess, overreacting in a crisis. So we found some companies across the board canceled all leadership development. And in some senses, you can see in top leadership firms, if you look at top leadership teams, in crisis situations, often the top team will start with the financial numbers, and unfortunately, they'll end with the financial numbers. And there's a certain comfort with dealing with the present, but it is self-limiting. So there's those who are more analytical than conceptual kind of rise to the top in those kind of crisis situations, and a short-term analytical focus becomes in vogue. And the best companies maintained a balance between conceptual thinking and analytical thinking, because when you think of what it is to do strategy, it's to present a concept or a picture of what the future will look like, and to make the decisions in the present that create that future. While if we're over analytical, we respond only to the present. So execution without strategy doesn't create a future. It might keep you in business for another quarter.
There's lots of information. You identified, I think, 20 companies as the best leadership companies?
Yes, we did. Yes. And there's... it's not necessarily a popularity contest. There's also, an algorithm around things, that how they answer different questions. But if you look at the 20, what I find interesting is that there are three basic kinds of cultures that are different that are represented in those 20. As expected, there's the big, complex, modern global organization where global issues are important. There's a pool of successors in place for mission-critical roles. And the General Electrics, Procter & Gamble's, Coca-Cola's, IBM's, and so forth are represented in those kinds of cultures. The second culture was more, you could call it a modern, learning-oriented, a fun place to work. Moving between functions is extremely common. People are expected to lead regardless if they have a position of authority. Motions are discussed in the workplace. Unilever is sort of like that, Hewlett-Packard, and if you look at Zappos, that's a very fun-loving kind of place, as is Southwest Airlines.
Sure.
Now, if you look at the third area where they collaborate for innovation, employers are encouraged to take new approaches to solve problems. If you see a problem, you're allowed to address it. Work-life balance is taken seriously. And I think the important thing to see is that none of these are better than the other. And from a practical standpoint, what you want to do is take your culture and to be able to leverage it for the success of your strategy. It isn't important for the global organization to try to be the fun-loving place necessarily. And so you would hope that the strategy and the culture are aligned, and you can use that culture to continue to develop your leaders, because with the culture, then leaders implicitly know how they should act and what are the best ways of moving forward with the strategy. So I thought that was there was interesting differences among them, but none of them really were better than the others.
It's a great report, and people should definitely check it out. There's lots of it. I don't know if the whole thing's online, but there's quite a bit of it online at the Business Week site. Any surprises that came out through this study?
I wouldn't say it's a surprise, but interesting point was that inspiration and strategic thinking seem to go together in the best companies for leaders. So it wasn't a sterile kind of putting together five operating annual plans and calling it a strategy.
Okay.
But rather in the strategic thinking area, that one, they defined a way to win, but secondly, they were able to get people to coalesce around it, and that the task of leadership was to make associates effective, to provide ammunition and an environment for teams in order to succeed. So inspiration was important. So besides plotting the way forward, they expected that the leaders would coalesce the organization around their must-win battles in a way that people could, one, feel included, and secondly, sign up for battle.
You already said you started the next study, so it's an annual study and be coming out next year. We'll be working with Bloomberg Business Week again?
That's correct. Yeah, we're lucky to be able to do that. And there are some live events that are going on. There's one at the Harvard Club March 23rd, with some of the panelists will be from some of these best companies for leaders, from General Electric, IBM, Goldman Sachs will be there, Unilever.
Great.
And be hosted by one of our consultants, Jeff Kirshner, and the editor of Business Week. So we will have those kinds of meetings in New York, Atlanta, Charlotte, Dallas, San Francisco, Chicago.
Great. And do you have a website listing these dates?
Yes. If your correspondents go on www.heygroup.com, they can find information on all these events and also see some podcasts and things that would kind of supplement the excellent work that you do with your blog.
Oh, thank you. Great. Yeah, we'll have definitely links in the show notes on the website, and so people can go there and find one of these events. Is there a fee for these events?
No, there's not. No, they're open. They're open to the public. In some cases, will co-sponsor with university, SMU. I'll be at the one at SMU. We haven't tied the date down exactly.
Wow,
but,
sounds like a
business school.
Sounds like a great opportunity. So I hope our listeners take advantage of it. I think you gave us your website, so that's good. People know where to find the Hay Group. We always ask our guests a couple questions, and wondering what you might be reading right now.
Well, it's interesting. I like to try to understand other people and other cultures, and I'm not Jewish myself, but actually I'm reading about the Talmud. Just for the sake of understanding other people better. It's one of the things that I'm reading at the moment.
Great. And we also ask people, if you had the opportunity, you're a busy person, you only have an hour or so to have lunch with somebody, it could be any contemporary or historical leader, any figure who exercises leadership, who would they be and what would you want to take away from that experience?
At the moment, I would like to meet with Tony Blair and understand, you know, what he thought he accomplished, what he thinks about the country post his leadership, and how he's made the transition from holding political leadership to being part of an NGO that's there to help people. You look at Bill Clinton and George Bush, they are, you know, coming together to help out humanity, and Tony Blair has done that. And I've wondered, you know, what it's been like for him. And I spent a lot of time in the United Kingdom doing consulting work, and I developed a real love for those people, and would love to see from his perspective what it is he's doing and what he's contributing.
Fantastic. He's a new one for our list, so thank you for sharing that with us. Well, is there any final thoughts you want to share with our listeners about the study or the Hay Group or leadership in general?
Well, I think when I looked at the best companies for leaders, they would no more do away with their leadership development than they would starve their children. And that was a big differentiator going forward, that they might not have spent as much money, which would be understandable in a downturn, but they didn't take their foot off the accelerator in terms of trying to develop the leadership potential of their people. So kudos to them.
Well, thank you so much for spending time with us and sharing your insights about how the research report was conducted. And we look forward to next year's already.
Thanks very much, and thanks for the service that you provide to us.
Well, we really thank John for taking the time to talk with us. And one thing that just jumped out at me as a great opportunity for students of leadership is the programs that they're offering around the country. And on March 31st, they're sponsoring an event in Atlanta, Georgia, I think it is, at Georgia Tech Global Learning Center. Yeah, in Atlanta. And it's March 31st is breakfast and networking from 7:30 to 8:30, and then panel discussions from 8:30 to 10. And here are the people that are going to be on the panel. Ann Schwartz is Vice President of Learning and Development at UPS. Roger Kood, Senior Vice President of Global Talent Management at Walmart. Brian Frawley, Senior Leadership and Talent Consultant at the Hay Group. Terry C. Blum, PhD, Director of the Institute for Leadership and Entrepreneurship at Georgia Tech College of Management. And it's going to be moderated by Patricia O'Connell, the Managing Editor at Bloomberg Businessweek. This event is free, so if they still have space, you know, and you're in Atlanta, this might be something worthwhile to spend a morning checking out and hearing some interesting people talk about leadership and network with some people in your community. It's free. You can register online. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. And John also mentioned that he has one where he'll be the host in, I believe, Dallas at SMU. Is SMU in Dallas? I don't know. But anyway, in SMU.
Let me make that point just a little bit more broadly, is that if you're interested in learning more about leadership, there are often many, many seminars run by whatever business school, school of management, even state university that has a business department. And they're typically run at a whole variety of price points, including free. So my suggestion is to contact the couple of schools near you, get on their email lists so that you find out about these events, because many of them are really quite extraordinary.
Definitely. Definitely great idea. So, Pam, do you have any closing thoughts about leadership this week?
Well, I'm really looking forward to interviewing a little later today Nina Bhatti, who is the director of HP Labs out here. And I've been so impressed with her perspective on how do you lead as a newer person in an organization and then now sort of from the middle of an organization, and how do you create a climate that really favors diversity.
Great. I look forward to that. We look forward to our listeners participating in the leadership conversation, and we've given you lots of ways to do that. So head on over to the website, which is weeklyleader.net, and find the post for the podcast and give some feedback about what you heard here or what you'd like to hear in the future. You could also send us an email at podcast@weeklyleader.net. And if you want to include an audio comment, just attach an MP3 file, 5 meg or less, and we'll find a way to put it into the show. We're all on Twitter. What's your Twitter ID, Pam?
Pam FR.
Okay, and Weekly Leader's at Weekly Leader, and I'm Peter Mello, and that's PeterMello. We always ask you for this favor. If you use iTunes to download the show, we really appreciate it if you would rate and review the podcast, because it helps us get more listeners. We also appreciate it, your support of our sponsors, GoToMeeting, and give their free trial a run for its money. It's gotomeeting.com/podcast. And we also have a widget on the side of the website for the Wall Street Journal. If you're a student of leadership, I highly encourage you to consider subscribing to the Wall Street Journal, because it's a great resource. So, Pam, thanks so much this week. Enjoyed talking with you, and I'm looking forward to your interview and chatting again next week.
Thanks, Peter.
You can never hold back spring. You can be sure I will never stop believing. The blushing rose, it will climb. Spring ahead or fall behind. The same dream every time. Baby, you can never hold back spring. And even though you've lost your way, the world is dreaming. Dreaming of spring. So close your eyes, open your heart to the one who's dreaming of you. And you can know. Spring can bring, baby, you can never.